About 2 weeks ago, on a Friday afternoon, my 13-year-old son Luke and I went to one of my favorite places in the Twin Cities, which is the Minneapolis Institute of Art. And it was so nice. I love the Institute because you can go in for 10 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour and focus on one piece of art or a show or just kind of just go around. And I always see something new. Just fun to sit in front of a few pieces of art. This particular time, there was a black and white photography show of protests from around the world. I really encourage you to see it if you can. And there were pictures of everything from the civil rights struggle to the taking over of the U.S. embassy in Tehran. Just incredibly powerful images to contemplate. But there was one in particular that just captured my imagination. And maybe some of you have seen it or seen it in the history books. And it's a picture from the Vietnam War era. And in this picture, the photographer took it at an angle. But you see a line of men, of National Guard troops, and they all have their guns pointed at a woman. And she's holding out a flower, so it's just pretty much touching the front part of one person's gun. But what really got to me was her note beside the picture, remembering that day. And she said, "What I remember most of all was I looked over, and these were all young men, and they were shaking. And not one of them made eye contact with me." And she started to wonder about, you know, why were they shaking? And she thought that maybe they were afraid that they would be ordered to shoot, or maybe they would accidentally shoot her. And I just thought about the lack of eye contact and how by not looking at someone, you don't have to see their humanity or acknowledge their dignity. This flower, just a sign of new life, of beauty, being held out in front of this line of pointed guns was so poignant. In today's gospel, when Jesus tells his followers to turn the other cheek, to not only give someone their coat, but their cloak, and to carry goods for 2 miles or longer than 1 mile, Jesus is not encouraging his followers to be spiritual doormats, although unfortunately this passage has been interpreted that way and used to justify abuse. Rather, Jesus is suggesting creative ways for his followers to hold a mirror up to their opponents, those who are abusing them, their antagonists, that allow them to retain their dignity while being mistreated or oppressed. So the instruction to give another person who's suing you not only your coat but your cloak meant give somebody else your undergarments, your underwear, meaning you would be standing there naked. This is a court scene. This person being sued is in debtor's court, is a peasant. And in Jesus' day, the wars of the Roman emperors, the wars they were just part of, that they were leading, that they were participating in, cost so much money that the wealthy were taxed very heavily. And so they were always trying to think of ways they could hide their wealth in non-liquid investments. And land was a great investment. But land was handed down in families from ancestors, and no peasant wanted to give up his or her land. So the way to get that land was to give the peasants loans at exorbitant rates and then eventually take the land. Why does Jesus counsel those who give their coat also give their cloak, meaning their undergarments. Well, nakedness was taboo in Judaism, and the shame fell less on the naked party than on the person who saw someone who was naked. By stripping, the debtor here has brought shame on the creditor, and in a way held a mirror up to the creditor to make him, it would have been him, see what he was doing. In the Roman Empire, soldiers could legally impress people to carry their gear 1 mile. They couldn't make subjected peoples carry their gear more than 1 mile, or the soldier would be called into military court. That was illegal, but you could have people carry your gear 1 mile. And this gear was heavy. It was 65, 85 pounds, not including weapons. So imagine a Roman infantryman pleading with someone that he had made carry his pack 1 mile to stop carrying his pack and give it back. Jesus is inviting his hearers into a world in which the people who are being oppressed by imperial power learn ways to recover their humanity. And I was trying to think of more current examples. I thought about the hats that women wore at the Women's March, because sometimes I think the best examples have an element of playfulness and humor in them. I think about, and it's a true story, a small Wyoming town in which a neo-Nazi threw a rock through a window of a Jewish family. Unfortunately, that rock went through the boy's bedroom. Thankfully, it didn't hurt him. They'd had a Star of David. You know, this was a known Jewish family because there were so few in this town. And almost everyone in that town put a Star of David on their window or on the front of their house. These were handed out at the cleaners and everywhere else for people to say, we are in solidarity with this family. Do not do this. In South Africa, there's a famous story of bulldozers coming to take down one of the towns where Zulu folk lived, and it was kind of a squatter area, and the women there knew that the Afrikaans men were very prudish, and so they took off their clothes in front of the bulldozers, and the men actually ran away. This is another true story. But I think, you know, in this time, it's important to think about these examples of this creative, nonviolent resistance. In all these examples, Jesus isn't telling his followers to submit to evil. He spent his entire ministry fighting evil. He's instructing them to refuse to oppose evil on its own terms. They're not to let their opponents dictate the methods of their opposition. Jesus is urging his followers to transcend both passivity and violence by finding a third way, one that is assertive and yet also nonviolent. Now, it would be easy to use Jesus' advice vindictively. And that's why we can't separate it from Jesus' command to love our enemies. Jesus isn't advocating nonviolence merely as a technique for outwitting the enemy, but as a just means of opposing the enemy that holds open the possibility of the enemy also becoming just. While followers of the way of Jesus must always work and speak for justice, meaning the flourishing of all people and protection of the vulnerable, we must never lose sight of the fact that our professed enemies are also God's beloved. In today's gospel, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven." That's tough. That's tough. Maybe toughest in some of our own families these days. But Jesus never said that his way was easy or convenient or pain-free. Jesus' way is often a way we don't want to go, and it's the way of the cross, a way that will ask everything of us. But Jesus will never ask anything of us that he didn't face or go through himself. And let us remember that on the cross, as he hung in pain and shame and a sense of profound abandonment, Jesus asked God to forgive those who had put him on the cross, for they know not what they do. If we take a deep look at world history, we see that, unfortunately, yesterday's victims, once in power, can sadly too easily become tomorrow's perpetrators. We also see an endless cycle of violence playing out around the globe. You hurt or killed my people, so I'm going to do the same to your people. Jesus was the one person able to break the cycle of violence by absorbing it into himself on the cross. And I'm not advising anyone here to do that. That would be masochism. We must remember that Jesus didn't commit suicide. He was killed by those who were threatened by him. I do advise that we learn more about this difficult life of unconditional love and creative resistance into which Jesus invites us. Because if we don't, the violence and conflicts will never cease, and we'll all end up destroying one another. God has gifted us with such a beautiful world and asked us to steward it for future generations. And I do believe that we're all called to participate in God's work to bring healing, sanity, and greater understanding between people from different worlds and people with vastly different political views. Jesus said, "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven." Amen.